Good morning, fellas. My name's Peter. I'm an alcoholic. Most of you guys know that. So just to set the record straight, I don't have TikTok as a, but I've heard about it. I have been sober a little while, and I have a home group. I have a service position in that home group. I think I've always had a service position, I got a sponsor who has a sponsor, so it, and so and I have a higher power. All of those things help me think about having adult supervision. Because left without adult supervision, I am left to my own devices, and I'll wind up restless, irritable, discontent, and burn the house down. And every few years, that's what I would do, and I was always puzzled about that. But anyway. I'm a two-time graduate of ECMC rehab and detox, and an alumnus of long-term rehab, residential rehab, and a beneficiary of a bunch of people who showed me and continue to show me the power of example. That was not always the case. And one of the I did something as a kid one time, and my dad asked me, he said, well, why'd you do that? And of course, I said, I don't know. And I didn't know the vocabulary of selfish and self-centered. I knew about selfish. I thought my younger siblings were selfish because they were taking attention away from me. But at any rate, so he said, well, why did you do that? And my answer was, I don't know. I don't know. And his response to that was, well, evidently, when God was passing out brains, you thought he said trains and let them go by. And he told me that I needed to learn how to listen. Imagine that. My dad's not an alcoholic. He's 95 years old. He'll be 96 December 1st. And he's in the hospital right now. We just found out in the last couple of days that that he's been in the hospital for almost a week. We just found out that he's got cancer. And it's not a good one. But he said, he's okay, and I have the privilege, and of being able to help out and being there for him, along with my siblings. That was not always the case. My drinking career probably started out, I didn't know it was a career, but probably started out sometime in high school, maybe a little bit before then. My dad was home from a business trip, and he was just trying to relax on a Saturday afternoon, and he had a martini. and a gin martini, which is, as we all know, is the only true martini. But I was bugging him. I said, "Well, just give me a sip. I was curious. Just give me a sip." Finally, I warmed down a little bit, and I think he just wanted to get rid of me, so he could, chill out for a little bit. And he said, "Okay, but this is Peter. This is Jim, and it's an acquired taste. You probably won't like it." I acquired that taste with one sip. I didn't know then what it might lead to. But at any rate, eventually it led to that place that we read about and that we all know, the dark place, separated from any kind of relationship, good relationship, and separated from ourselves and from any kind of higher power. The only thing I wasn't separated from was the making up a story about how I might not get found out that I was a failure at life, and that I might have a problem with alcohol. My second, I won't make the drunk long too long, but my second marriage lasted 32 years, and it turns out that we had a great life in many, many, many respects. My wife is part of my story. My wife Martha was part of my story. Some of you guys know this, but she was just terrific. But she was also an alcoholic, and I didn't understand any of that. I might have been a heavy drinker, but I had control over. I thought, at least I thought I did, about the drinking and work and so on. I was wrong about all of that. I was wrong about being able to get her cured, and spared no expense about that. There came a time when after a long stay in an expensive rehab out of network. I didn't care what it cost. I just wanted them to fix her. She stayed sober for a number of months, quite a few months, and she had a sponsor. And I don't know how much effort she put into those three essentials of willingness, open-mindedness, and honesty. But there was one visit towards the end of up to ECMC, and Dr. Whitney, who was the head of the whole alcohol and drug program at ECMC, he said, he took me aside. He said, "Peter, I can't fix her, and either can you. She has a God-shaped hole that's between her and God." And I thought, WTF? What do you mean? What do you mean you can't fix her after all of this? And he said she was She was an end-stage alcoholic. And then I couldn't fix her. And he suggested that that I leave her. Otherwise, I would follow the same path, and I wouldn't do that. She died of a dramatic death before I could get her to the hospital. And that took me down, instead of a long, slow slide, it got a little steeper. And the next year and a half, 2 years, I traveled to the dark place. And to the point of standing in the shower. Didn't have the water on it quite yet, but with my 20 gauge. And for some reason, you know, all that craziness, at any rate, I had this thought that it would be terribly selfish of me to have my parents bury a second son. And I put the gun down and called Dr. Whitney. And I didn't think of it as a surrender or anything. I went in, and I put myself in their care. I had this willingness to, okay, I'm out of moves. I took his suggestions, and you know, one of the things he said is they shipped me off to South Buffalo for rehab, residential rehab. He said, think of it as a spiritual retreat, and I'll put you in touch with a good shrink, but I want you to go to AA, and promise me you'll do that, and at least be compliant. And I said I would, and it just so happens that there I fell in with a bunch of people who called me on my ship with humor, and sometimes painful directness, and an example, and they showed me how to live, and I came to trust in what they were doing and what they were saying. And they gave me a job. They gave me a service job. They gave me opportunities to get out of myself and to have some purpose, which I was incapable of having. And I started going through the book with my first sponsor, who I did not like at all. But that was me, and that was my paranoia, my fear. But I kept going. And I love the name of this group, Men Who Trudge. I I was that Appendix 2 really there was a moment there that really opened my eyes about my arrogance, my biases, my judgmentalism, all that stuff, and my intellectual arrogance. And I thought, holy shit. That's me. That's me. And another brick in that wall that I had surrounded me came loose. And I wound up coming back to Buffalo, back to civilization here on the other side of Cazenovia Creek. And got a new sponsor at that point that I still have, and we went through the book, and I should say, I forgot to say, I sponsor a few people, and have sponsored a number, none of whom I've taken. I've shared the journey all the way through the 12 steps, which is kind of wild, but it's humbling that I do my part, and that's their journey. And as a result, I haven't had a drink in a long time, and these guys have helped me. A number of them are still sober. A few I haven't seen in a long, ever since. But it teaches me. It teaches me. I have to ask for. I have to ask for help every morning to invite that power in and at least do something. At least do something that might add to instead of take away. I can say this, that I don't steal people's love anymore. I might piss some people off from time to time, which I do. But there's a solution for that too. There's so many along the way that are no longer with us that their voices are still in my head and in my heart. And we just don't know how far those ripples might go. And we throw that pebble into a pond or whatever. You get what I'm saying. And so not knowing my friend Bernard, one time after a meeting, he said, he turned to me and he said, "You know, Peter, God's a mystery." And I could, I got that. I got that. And I never, I always wanted to, me, I always wanted to know what that was all about. And I didn't understand mystery, and how can you put your trust in a mystery? And I see, I had no faith, except in myself and probably a bunch of material things, and also the loyalty and love people who I was close to. But I, you know, every once in a while I would betray that loyalty and trust with friends, with family, with my wife, and so I came to that point where I came to that point where the no heck, I lost the thread there for a second, but at any rate, including being unemployable. But here's what I was going to say. I had no purpose. And for some reason, in my first year, I'm still filled with, at times with, yeah, I know, and what if, and yeah, but there's a way out of that, which is what they were going to call a book. But the line that I'm thinking of was, our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help others. I could buy into that. I could buy into that. I need to buy into that. And now I want to. And I've been shown how to in that reading that that John did as we opened this meeting, and how it works. As the result of doing this stuff, waking up, I'm grateful, I'm a grateful alcoholic. Today I, people ask me, almost every day, hey, how are you? And it depends on who I'm talking to. My standard answer is, hey, I woke up on the right side of the grass today, and it wasn't on my neighbor's lawn. And that usually gets a chuckle, sometimes a quizzical look, but most people get it. Those who know me, those who have known me, I've been faced with more than a couple health challenges, the coolest one was when I was told that I had cancer, and that it would require it would require some work on a collective basis, including my own, and of course my surgeons and doctors and so on. And for about 30 seconds, the squirrel cage was running at on turbocharge, and then I had that pause. See, I'm powerless over my first thought, but the second one, because I'm a member, an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, the second one says, oh, why not me? Why not me? And, after all, it's another surrender. And you know, I asked for mercy, for everyone involved, to be guided, and let the outcome be what the outcome would be. I'm not going to go on very much longer, but I'll tell you one little story. Martha had a daughter when we first got together. Her name was Deirdre. Deirdre was an alcoholic, but not as a little kid. But she's my stepdaughter, and she was her mother and I raised her. Long story short, when I made my amends to her, and this was after, of course, after her mother had passed away and everything else, for which she had blamed me. But that's just part of the story. She said, "Stay the hell out of my life." Well, she used the F word. "I never want to see you again." And many years passed. And again, this fellowship and this program gave me the patience, the hope, and the purpose to keep trudging and just try to do the next right thing that's in front of me. And I'm reminded, when I don't do that, when I resist doing that, I'm fighting myself and I'm fighting others. And I better get off my ass, talk to somebody, get to a meeting, or try to do something productive, preferably for somebody else, even if it's just a good morning to someone. So, almost 2 years ago, I got a phone call from Deirdre, and she had had multiple suicide attempts. Drugs and alcohol had devastated her life, and when she called, she said, "Peter, I've been sober for 6 months. I have a sponsor. I have a home group, and I was wondering if we could get together, maybe, and catch up." Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? After all that time, so we did, and that relationship was healed. Well, it turns out that her body had been, she'd been compromised in so many ways, and she got sick this summer, and it would be fatal. And she was in a drug-induced coma, her life had changed. She was happy. She had a life partner. She was sober. She loved AA. And so there came a time when we had to take her off life support. And the only thing that I asked when I said a little prayer was for a merciful outcome. And of course I said, "Your will, not mine," but this would be really good if we had a merciful outcome here. And when we took her, the doctors took her off the machines, she didn't struggle, and she was gone within, 20 minutes. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? And that's, I couldn't ask for anything more than that. And this, these things would never happen. You know, the resentment I had, the resentments I had against my dad for so many years, that's been healed. My powerlessness over fixing my wife, that's been healed. As long as I do this, as long as I continue to try to do this, stick around guys like you, things seem to turn out okay. And I'm looking to continue that. And that's pretty much all I got. Thanks, fellas. Thank you, Jim, for